We're talking to Michael Miller on the Wintrust Business Lunch, Professor Emeritus at DePaul. And we were talking about the Fed and interest rates, and I want to look backward just a little bit and then more forward. And in fact, I think I'm going to ask you the forward question first, Michael. We'll do that in 60 seconds, Producer Pete reminds me. Now's the time when structural problems can start in your home. If you're noticing new cracks in your walls or your brickwork, sinking ground or concrete, maybe the floors sag, maybe the windows and doors stick. Those are symptoms of structural foundation problems. It's time to call PermaSeal Basement Systems. Too often, homeowners ignore these things, and then they get big problems later on that cost a lot more to fix. Call PermaSeal today, 1-800-421-7325. You can rely on an honest, accurate, free evaluation from PermaSeal. They've got trained experts. They've been doing this for 44 years. They are our most trusted contractors in this area for basement and foundation repairs. That's how they got that A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and a 4.9 on Google. Who gets a 4.9 on Google? For a free thorough inspection, call PermaSeal, 1-800-421-SEAL, 1-800-421-7325, or visit permaseal.net. One more time, permaseal.net. Michael, if the Fed does raise rates again another quarter point, how would I notice that? What would say I'm not buying or selling a home, but where would I notice that?
That if you're not buying much on credit, you're not going to notice it at all until you do, again, buy something on credit. So that's why it takes almost two full years for the Fed's change in interest rate to affect the economy, because it doesn't hit everyone at the same time. It'll hit people who are trying to buy a home right now. It'll hit owe money on credit cards and so forth. But if you're one that manages your credit cards very well and you're not buying a car or a house or so forth, you won't be affected that much by these interest rate increases. You will have a positive in that there's a chance that the returns on your safe deposits at banks and so forth would rise. So there could actually be a positive effect. But eventually, you're going to probably want to borrow money to buy a car, or you're going to borrow money to do something, maybe buy a house, and then you'll have to pay that higher rate along with everybody else. So it takes time. It takes up to 2 years.
Did you see that there are now 32 models of cars for sale in the United States that average $100,000 or more?
Yeah, I heard you talking about that earlier on. That's just stunning.
I'm telling you. I mean, God bless you if you can afford it, but wow. Looking back, though, maybe we should learn some lessons from either the pandemic bailout or what the Fed has been doing with interest rates since. You said there are some studies about that, and I wondered if you'd just talk about that briefly.
Yeah, sure. We do know that any time you change prices, you're going to affect people's decisions. And when the Fed changes the price of money through the interest rate, there are going to be winners and there's going to be losers. And the Fed has to weigh those winners and losers and how much, you know, people are going to be hurt by it, and then weigh it against, is this good for the economy as a whole? And then those losers are just going to have to suck it up and deal with it. Now, during the pandemic, of course, interest rates were really low, and this meant mortgage rates were really low, which meant that lots of people wanted to buy homes because it was very affordable. Now, that caused prices, of course, to rise. Now, what was interesting is not every household was affected the same. Households that had very large percentages of their portfolio in residential real estate came out with major increases in wealth, and it turns out that the two, I guess you'd call them ethnical group, were blacks and Hispanics, had much higher increases in wealth during that short period of the pandemic when prices were rising so quickly in housing than, say, white households. And the reason that's the case is because black and Hispanic households hold much of their portfolio in their home as opposed to, say, stocks and bonds and things like that. Now, that also means, though, as interest rates begin to rise, it's harder for people to get into the market to mm-hmm. buy a house. Mm-hmm. And who, of course, was affected the most by an increase in interest rates would be the lower and middle income families, many of whom, of course, are black and Hispanic. So the Fed, in one sense, when they had interest rates really low, Black and Hispanic families kind of won out and had major increases in wealth. And now, of course, they're doing something to interest rates, which will affect these households quite negatively. And these losers, winners choices that the Fed is making are very common. And the Fed has to do this all the time to figure, you know, remember when interest rates were really low, who was hurt the most? It would be, I always refer to it in my class as grandma. It would be somebody who is retired that has their money, say, in very safe investments like treasuries and bank accounts where they were earning essentially nothing on their money.
I think, I think a lot of our listeners, though, are recent retirees or want to retire, and they want to have as robust a portfolio as they can for the next 30 years. They want the market to do well. What path is best for the Fed or the government to take to ensure that?
Well, the best thing to do to ensure that would be to encourage entrepreneurship and to allow capitalism to roar, to get out of the way in terms of regulation, to have taxes that are where they look at the costs and benefits of the taxes, make sure the tax rates are not too high to discourage people from working or from investing, but they're not too low, that we have massive borrowing by the federal government. So if the government could, in a sense, try to minimize its influence on the economy, this would allow the economy to grow the fastest it could, which, of course, then would be good for stocks and the holdings of households.
How did I know you were going to say that?
I guess because I'm a conservative.
What would be the argument against that, though? Just play your own devil's advocate. What would the other side say about that?
Well, I'm trying to think of what would be a good argument. The problem with capitalism, when you do have this, like we know that not only we did notice that Black and Hispanic households did really well during that short period of the pandemic, but there's still a huge gap between white and Black wealth. And maybe what happens oftentimes in capitalism is that you get an unfair outcome. And it's kind of easy to point to and say, well, look at the big differences between groups of people and so forth. And what you want to do is oftentimes you want to blame capitalism as opposed to maybe decisions that say a household that puts all of its money into very safe investments is going to make a much, you know, their wealth will grow very slowly compared to those who take risks. And so economists have tried to find what kind of a portfolio gives you the best return, you know, almost regardless of who is in charge of the economy. But I know that, like Mr. Biden, he wants things to be more fair, and he thinks, therefore, that we need to try to get some people at the top to pay more in taxes, and that he thinks that this would be a good thing. I think it's arguable whether that is truly the case.
Or maybe that it's not cause and effect. It does seem as though the economy is doing well. Employment is doing well. Wages have gone up, and we are growing the economy from the middle out. I'm not sure if that's in conflict with what you've been talking about, but that's obviously Bidenomics.
Yeah, I just wish if I could get Mr. Biden in, you know, in my living room, we could talk for a little bit. The one thing I would want him to do is to focus more upon growth, less upon redistribution. Mm. And when it comes to growth, to focus upon entrepreneurship. And I did send Pete a couple, a report that showed that the number of new startups being created in America now is at the highest it has been in about 15 years, which is a really good sign. So in some sense, the strength of the economy going forward will be driven by that entrepreneurship, which, see, to me, would be a conservative view that you would want to focus upon the government trying to encourage people to be entrepreneurs. And apparently entrepreneurs are taking the chances now. They didn't during the pandemic. Early in the pandemic, there was a major decline. Yeah. In people taking chances.
That is enough to make you hope that interest rates go down too, isn't it? That if we can,
it is.
It would seem those would go hand in hand.
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that the Fed is actually going to pull off something which is called a soft landing, which is going to be a rise in interest rates to fight inflation without pushing us into a recession.
Hey.
Last time it was done was the mid-90s, and I think it's still possible now. I know a lot of sensible people are calling for a recession. I don't see it. I think the households are solid, that people can still have jobs. They can still get jobs. Their wages are finally beginning to rise above inflation, which is a good thing. So I'm optimistic. So maybe what's something Mr. Biden is doing is working.
Michael Miller is a professor emeritus, DePaul University, regular guest of ours. It's always good to talk to you, Michael. Thanks for giving us your thoughts today.
You got it. Talk to you later.
Nobody follows the tech scene, the startup scene, better than Jim Dahlke. He's the national editor at American Inno. You can click on ChicagoInno.com to read stories like these. And I'm kind of intrigued by this list of the top, well, the 5,000 list from Inc. magazine and who makes it to number one. Jim, let's start there. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me. Yeah. The annual Inc. 5000 list out last week. This is a list that Inc. does every year, and ranking companies by percentage revenue growth over the last 3 years. So looking from 2019 to 2022. The highest ranking Chicago company on the list comes in at number 11, and this is Songfinch. This is a company that you and I have chatted about here before in the past. This is a Chicago startup that allows folks to connect with musicians who can turn a customer's personal story or their feelings into a unique professional quality song. So really a neat idea, and the company has been growing like crazy. So, you know, we often talk about the doom and gloom that's going on in startup land right now, and Songfinch is really kind of bucking that trend, right? So this is a company launched in 2016. By early January 2020, they had about $30,000 in the bank, really no staff left. But they found product market fit, and this is a company that had $5.5 million in revenue in 2021. They did $36 million in revenue last year, and the company says it's on track to do $75 million in revenue in 2023. So really an exceptional growth story. I mean, and this company's got now 70 full-time employees. So, despite the headwinds that are facing the tech industry, we've got a really feel-good story here in Songfinch, which is developing a really interesting consumer startup that clearly is taking off with users.
How like or unlike Cameo is Songfinch? Do you see any parallels or contrasts? I mean, they are kind of trading in a sort of similar space, it seems to me.
Absolutely. There are definitely parallels here. And, the founders have kind of made that connection as well. It's a business model that is definitely similar. And one thing that's similar about it that I really think is interesting is that the revenue it provides to the artist. So like Cameo, the musicians on Songfinch are able to, find a revenue stream that they previously weren't able to find. If you were sort of a mid-tier musician, you're really hustling, right? You're trying to find gigs every night. Maybe you're moving to Nashville. Maybe you're moving to L.A. Maybe you're kind of uprooting your life to really find the best place to create music and make money. But with Songfinch, you get a little home studio. You can be creating music and getting paid for it, right from home. And it really kind of opens up this brand new revenue stream for musicians in a similar way that, Cameo opened it up for, internet personalities and sort of B and C list celebrities to connect with fans and make money that way.
But Cameo's been struggling a little of late, and it seems like their trajectories are in different directions. Even if Cameo is the bigger dog and has more gross revenue, it seems like Cameo is struggling a little bit and Songfinch is not. Is that true?
That's right. It's a tricky time for Cameo right now. They are a business that is downsized quite a bit, and they really, raised quite a bit of venture capital in those, late 2020, early 2021 period of startup growth, and are now feeling the squeeze a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, really kind of two different stories here. But I mean, I do think that both have really hit on something, business-wise, where they've created a product that consumers are interested in. Now, where do they evolve and go from here? Time will tell. But, it's definitely interesting that Chicago, being the home base for both of these companies, both of them are kind of a business model that you typically would see in Silicon Valley, not exactly the stereotypical, pragmatic, conservative Chicago startup idea.
I want to go on to other things you all have written, but any other companies in this Inc. 5000 list that you want to mention?
Yeah, so all in all, there are about 221 Chicago companies on this year's list. And, you know, I mean, there's a few there. There's a company called Ama La Vida. They're a life coaching startup. They come in at number 1,400 on the list, so not exactly number 11. But, you know, another good story of just, like, solid startup growth here in Chicago. And there's lots of more examples of companies like that, as you'll see on the list.
I see Meta has dropped the hammer on return-to-office plans in leaked memo. What's this story?
Yeah, Meta is getting serious about its return-to-work plan. It has told its employees that if they don't abide by their three-day in-office mandate, they can be fired. So that's a memo that they sent out to employees. And really, it's just sort of an example here of, hey, you know, the tech industry is getting serious in some cases here about return to office. You know, the tech industry has been in flux in terms of its decisions of, hey, do we do hybrid? Do we do fully remote? Do we bring people back full time? Meta clearly saying, hey, we need you in the office 3 days a week, and we're serious. Chicago has a local Facebook office opened about 15 years ago, and they started as just a small 10-person sales outpost. An office is now 500 or so employees here in Chicago, and a range of different roles from also product, operations, HR, even some engineering roles, too.
But they're only asking them to be there 3 days a week, right? 3 out of 5?
Yeah, just 3 days. So, pretty reasonable, I think, right? You know, just in 3 days a week. And so we'll see. I mean, I think a lot of large companies have been apprehensive to kind of take a hardline stance because they're concerned that, you know, a decision like that could lead to employees saying, hey, I'm looking for something else. You know, of course, Facebook, one of the better paying companies around, right? So it's possible that they're going to have less problem there because people still want to get a nice paycheck from Facebook. So, you know, we'll see kind of what this does in terms of employee turnover. But Facebook is saying, hey, you know, we need you in the office, you know, sort of the age old question of, you know, hey, could the iPhone have been invented if everybody was working completely remote? You know, probably not, right? So Facebook is saying, hey, you know, there's a huge value in those in-person connections. And we need to be innovating here in the office.
Chicagoinno.com. Go there. You can read more like this. The national editor at American Inno is Jim Dahlke. Thanks, Jim. Let's talk again.
Thanks, John.
If you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, this is WGN. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago's Innovation Hub 1871 is looking for the next big product or service in insurance technology. The accelerators announced its new program called InsurTech Innovation Lab with an October launch date. The space is expected to bring together major players in the insurance landscape. 1871 leaders think that area is poised for major transformation and innovation. InsurTech refers to the use of technology innovation to find cost savings and efficiency in the current insurance industry model. A small business grant program in Cook County has extended the deadline to apply for pandemic recovery funds. The deadline's been moved to this Friday, August 25th. Since its inception in 2020, the Cook County Small Business Source Grant has provided funding to more than 13,000 small businesses. The program's available to small businesses in Cook County that were operational prior to the pandemic with fewer than 20 employees. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And yesterday was National Radio Day, and look who's on the phone. It's an old broadcaster.
Mr. Armstrong here.
More from Max about some old iron after I thank some new iron for sponsoring us, the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Max, let's talk about old iron, the big half-century of progress show at the old Air Force Base in Rantoul.
Well, it starts this coming Thursday. We get underway Thursday morning with a tractor ride, but all of the field demonstrations will be taking place that day, as well as Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, those field demos are really the special sauce of the show, aren't they?
It's the opportunity to see the old agriculture equipment working in the fields. The tractors plowing, the corn pickers made in the mid-50s, early 60s, actually harvesting the crops. It's kind of a three-ring circus. There's so much going on at any one time.
Well, I think that would make you the ringmaster, wouldn't it, Max?
Yes, I'll be there. We're doing a couple of afternoon stage shows. We'll have copies of our new book, More Stories from the Heartland, and we look forward to signing some copies there at the half century.
It could be a hot one, Max. I'm looking at the forecast. I see some upper 90s for later in the week.
We are better prepared for this show, though. We have a cooling center. Has air conditioning inside. There'll be water around. There'll be all kinds of concessions at this show as well. You can get a good pork chop sandwich. The Iowa pie lady is coming. She's selling pieces of pie right out the window of her trailer. And let there be no mistake about it, Max Armstrong has an account with the Iowa Pie Lady.
It's been an every other year show the past 20 years, and it occurs just 2 days before the Farm Progress Show in Decatur.
And truly, there are people who restore machines specifically for this show. And in fact, if you get up close to those tractors at the show at the Rantoul, you may smell the new paint on them. They are fresh, let me just put it that way.
Thanks, Max. The Half Century of Progress Show in Rantoul, Thursday through Sunday, halfcenturyofprogress.com for more info.
And it's just a neat event, a great family event.
From the dairy farm to your belly, today's National Spumoni Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Summer's not completely over, though. We still got baseball. The Schaumburg Boomers will wrap up their regular season during Labor Day's weekend. Let's talk a little bit about that now with the Boomers Executive Vice President and General Manager, Michael Larson. Michael, it's John Williams. Welcome back. How's the season been going?
It's been going great. We're sitting here with record attendance and everything going into the season. The three largest crowds we've had in history have all come this year. And our largest average attendance is going on right now. We're closing in on the record for Frontier League attendance in the season.
Wow.
We should hit that this weekend, actually, with three games to go afterwards.
What kind of numbers are those? What are you talking about?
So July 3rd, we were at 7,600 and some change, and then that set the record. And then we broke it July 4th with 7,880, I believe was the number. And then last Friday, the August 11th, for our marshmallow fight, we finished right between the two, so that ended up now being the new number two. For the season, we're looking at closing in on the record of 218,000 set by Southern Illinois back in 04, 05, somewhere in there, and we should pass that this weekend. So it's been a great year for attendance, for crowds. We haven't really had to fight the weather too much this year, which unfortunately changes in the next 3 days, but this weekend looks fantastic. So the other part of it is it's been a great year on the field. We're once again in the playoff hunt. Right now we're a couple games out of first and then about four or five games up on the wild card as we close out the season. The last six home games we have are against the two teams we're fighting for playoff spots with. So the last two series are going to mean a lot for us.
You said the marshmallow fight?
Oh, that's a fun one. It's our groundskeeper's least favorite event.
Yeah.
But it's our annual event where we get five pallets of cases of these baseball-sized marshmallows. And we put them in the outfield after the game. And for 20 minutes, you know, everyone goes on the field and whips them at each other.
Which is exactly what I thought it was. No, wait, I have no idea where that idea came from. But like many things you all do, it really sounds fun. But I'm glad you're talking about baseball, too. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to put a nice product out there, too, right?
Yeah, and that's, you know, our big thing is how focused we are on the actual baseball side of things. Chicagoland is a baseball community. People love their baseball here, and they want to see winners. And that's a big part of what we put out there. We've won four of the last nine league championships, and we were in five of the last nine league championships with another playoff appearance. Hmm. Almost assured so far this year. We just need to win a few games. I don't want to jinx it. I got to say almost. Yep. I think the magic number is three or four right now, so with 15 games to go.
Well, let's walk through real quickly with Michael Larson. He's with the Schaumburg Boomers, obviously. Boomersbaseball.com is the website if you want to revisit some of this information. But let's just talk about some of the things we can do at the ballpark. If I go tomorrow night, it's a buck for a hot dog, right?
Dollar hot dog night tomorrow night. And you know what? The sun sets a little earlier, so I think it's going to cool off a lot faster, but the next 3 days will be hot. But Wednesday night's pro wrestling night. We have some special Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase jerseys that the team will wear and auction off for charity. The Hall of Famers, pro wrestling Hall of Famers, Ted DiBiase and Rikishi will both be there signing autographs. That's Wednesday night. Thursday's a day game at noon. Boy, our suite level is sold out. Anything with air conditioned is sold out. And if you don't have that spot, I don't know if I'd advise coming out, to be honest. Very rarely will you hear me say pick another day.
Well,
but
you're a good man.
Looking at the forecast.
Well, what about August 27th? Is that the dog day, August 27th?
Yeah, we have a huge weekend coming up. Friday night, mental health awareness night, post-game fireworks, a beautiful Friday night, it looks like, in the weather. Saturday, we have Squishmallow giveaways for the first 1,000 fans, plus fireworks, plus a beautiful Saturday night. And then Sunday is Bark in the Park, where you can bring your dog out to the ballpark.
Okay. September 2nd, fan appreciation and post-game fireworks on the 3rd. That's the last regular season home game, mm-hmm. military appreciation game. If you are active or former, you get up to 6 free tickets if you use the promo code APPRECIATION for the 3 o'clock September 3rd game. And then the playoffs. Michael Larson's the VP and GM at Schaumburg Boomers. Boomers Baseball. Congratulations, Michael. Really good report to hear. Good luck this week and weekend.
Thank you very much for having me.